How is the air quality inside your home? It might be worse than you think. People with asthma and other respiratory problems pay close attention to air quality reports, especially in the hottest days of summer, when air pollution from the country's Midwest can trigger air quality alerts here. When that happens, the advice is for certain people to stay indoors with the windows closed. And in most cases, that is good advice. But it presumes that the air quality inside your home is pure. And that is not necessarily the case. All kinds of pollutants, from radon to mold, formaldehyde to lead, can get into the air and cause health problems. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn about creating a healthy home, office, or school with good indoor air quality. What are your questions? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. We spend the vast majority of our time indoors, especially when you include your time asleep. And yet we often take for granted the quality of the air that we breathe when we are in our homes, our workplaces, and our schools. Not surprisingly, indoor air quality is directly linked to our well-being, and poor air quality can have a serious effect on our health. Today we're going to learn about the biggest air quality problems in Maine and what to do about them. In the studio with me, Stephen Caulfield. He is president of Turner Building Science and Design, and he is on the board of the Maine Indoor Air Quality Council. And Kurt Johnson is also here. He's the owner of Fresh Air Ventilation Systems. He's also a board member of the Maine Indoor Quality Air. The Maine Indoor Air Quality Council. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you concerned about the air in your home or office? Do you have questions about how to improve it? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Kurt, when you arrived this morning, a few minutes before the program, you got busy. What have you been doing in our offices?
Oh, I bought some simple air testing equipment just to see what some basic parameters of carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, and maybe some VOCs. I couldn't get my VOC to work, but the carbon dioxide in here level is pretty good, meaning that there's a good degree of fresh air ventilation going on through your system.
Okay. And so far, so good. One test not done.
Right.
Okay. All right. But let's back up a little bit. I want to talk about the Maine Indoor Air Quality Council. Both of you are past presidents of the organization. Kurt, tell us what it does.
The Maine Indoor Air Quality Council was actually set up back in the late 90s as a directive from the governor. And the goal was to educate people on the dangers of indoor air pollution and also to develop some guidelines as far as, you know, what do we need to do to reduce the dangers that it presents to us here in Maine.
Interesting, only set up in the 90s. So before that, this wasn't something that people focused on as a research area. As much.
Not in the recent history, but if you go back to earlier in the early 1900s, actually indoor air pollution was a big issue and about 30 states had actually adopted ventilation rates back then.
I want to bring you into the conversation, Steve. Why are indoor air quality and outdoor air quality treated as two separate issues?
Well, there's a different environment inside our buildings. And what can happen is that levels of pollutants can be higher inside buildings because they're not being removed if there isn't proper ventilation in a building. And oftentimes we're using chemicals, we're trapping moisture in buildings. And so it leads to higher levels of pollutants than we see outdoors, where the wind can move those pollutants away a little faster.
You guys are both talking about ventilation, which makes me think about all of the reporting I've done over the years and many others about how important it is to weatherize your home. Do we find as people are tightening up their homes and trying to have fewer leaks so their heat is not escaping in the wintertime that we're having more problems with indoor air quality?
Yeah, there is some correlation there. certainly one of the effects of weatherizing is that you're reducing the exchange of air from indoors to outdoors, trying to capture the heat in Maine. We're trying to make sure we stay warm in the winter. One of the other effects that's less well seen is that the heat in the buildings tends to drive moisture out. Warmer surfaces tend not to condense water, and that's one of the other problems. So we see two things with weatherization. One would be reduced ventilation from leakage around windows and doors and other things. But we also see that the surfaces within walls and within roofs and things tend to be colder on the outside. And so then if moisture is getting trapped in that cavity, if you will, there's a higher probability that it's going to condense into water. And moisture is the main cause of mold issues. So there's some correlation there. The other thing is that, well-ventilated spaces, and I'll leave most of this to Kurt because he's an expert in ventilation, but well-ventilated spaces tend to have lower levels of all kinds of pollutants. So if you think about any of the things we're going to talk about, lead, radon, mold, other contaminants, they're all going to be lower if you have more ventilation from outdoors.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about ventilation, Kurt. Is an old home less likely to have good ventilation than a newer home?
Maybe, maybe not. It all depends upon how the structure was built and what maybe they've done to the structure. It's interesting when you look from a ventilation standpoint, the first ventilation standard was actually adopted in 1895, and it was adopted after a very smart doctor who saw what was happening in buildings and looked at a bunch of research from other countries, and it was very obvious that when you pack a whole bunch of people, like in a hospital who are sick, that they get sicker, they actually don't get better. And what they found out was when you put them in barns and tents outside where they had more ventilation, they actually fared a whole lot better. So the pollutants inside could be based on what the people are doing. It can also be based upon what they're creating. In other words, back then you had a lot of combustion on the inside. But our problems today are a little bit different. We still can transmit disease from one another. But in the 70s, when the price of oil went up, there was a big change in how we made our buildings. And we started to really focus on creating less leakage of air from the inside to the outside to keep heat in. But we also did two other things that have really taken place over the next couple of decades, which was we bring more and more synthetic organic compounds into the place, like plastics that actually off-gas things into the air that was never a problem before. And we also spend much more time inside than we ever did before. In fact, the average American, there was a study done in 2001 that shows the average American spends 90% of their time inside.
And, you know, one of our regular guests on this program is the state fire marshal, Joe Thomas, and he talks about all those synthetic materials also being so much more flammable, that our homes are so much more flammable than they used to be, the rugs and the couches and the mattresses and what we might hang on our windows. So interesting that they also are giving off fumes, you say, that are bad for us.
That's correct. So if you I just bought a new mattress. And the instructions were you should air it out for 24 hours. And I can tell you when I opened it up,
How many people put their mattress outside for 24 hours before they bring it in?
At least one, because I did.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so let's go through the list, Steve. We've talked about mold very briefly. Mm-hmm. Radon is something we hear a lot about in Maine. A huge problem here, right?
Right, and it's naturally occurring. It comes from the breakdown of radioactive materials in our granite. So we, you know, it's under the ground and we build on top of it. And the issue with radon is that it's colorless, it's odorless, and it tends to have an effect over many years. It's a carcinogen and it's responsible. It's the number two cause of lung cancer in the country. And people aren't aware because it's you don't see it, you don't smell it, you don't know that you're affected by it unless you test for it. So there are relatively easy tests to determine whether you have radon, and it's typically found in the lowest level of the house because it comes out of the ground. Right. But if you test for it and find that you have high levels of radon, then reducing that level is, again, relatively simple. It's not inexpensive, but it's not exceedingly expensive to deal with a radon problem. So we at the Mayor Air Quality Council have been, you know, over the last 20 years trying to educate people about the dangers of radon and really the ease of dealing with those that issue.
I read, and this is a statistic from 2014, that it's estimated 1/3 of Maine homes have higher levels of radon than is safe. Is that statistic accurate, and is it still accurate?
Actually, it is accurate, and what you just said there is safe. And this is part of the problem, is that the EPA's guidance of 4 picocuries per liter and above, you should reduce it. At 4, the EPA says 1 in 44 people gets lung cancer being exposed to that level over time. So I would say that 4 is not a safe level. In fact, the EPA says if you're down, you really want to get it below 2. If reasonably possible, but they actually recommend from 2.5 to 4, it's still dangerous enough that you should consider doing something about it. So the safe level, there is no safe level. We're talking about reducing our probabilities, and the lower the number, the lower those probabilities are.
If you're listening right now and thinking, if you're listening and you've bought or sold a home recently, there was likely a radon test. But if you've lived in the same home for a number of years and you're thinking, boy, is this me? First of all, where do I get my test? How much does it cost? And if I have to do the remediation, how much does it cost?
I would say the tests can range from as simple as you can buy it at a hardware store or any of the big box stores, cost about $30 to $45. And that'll give you a measurement. And if you're close to a level you should be concerned about, my recommendation would be try to be below 2. Try to be as low as you can. You can hire somebody, and you might spend $300, $350 to have a professional come in and do the testing. And then remediation, depending upon what way you need to do it, you can spend $1,200 up to about $2,000 to solve the problem.
Okay. And what's the remediation? Is it ventilation or is it?
Well, usually the remediation involves removing air from underneath your floor slab in the basement, if you have a basement, or if you're on in a slab home, it's removing air from under that slab. So you create a negative pressure by sucking air out from under the slab, and then you exhaust that above your roof line. So you're essentially interrupting the pathway from the radon coming up and into the house. Generally, using ventilation to deal with the radon problem takes more ventilation than it's worth. So over time, it costs more. You only have to remove a little bit of air from under the slab to create that pressure gradient that gets the radon out.
All right. Well, we've mentioned mold. We've mentioned radon. What are other common pollutants that are inside our homes, our businesses, our schools?
The list is actually pretty long, but we can look at ethanol, acetone, formaldehyde. There's many different VOCs, some which we know are dangerous, some we know absolutely nothing about. We got PCBs that are in there. We might have exhaust fumes that migrate in from an attached garage, and anything else that might be in the garage, gasoline vapors, any organic compound that's in there, maybe pesticide. Because the tendency is with an attached building like that, a garage, the tendency is for that air to actually migrate into the house. And most people don't realize that. So attached buildings that have pollutants in them are likely going into the house as the air moves up through the house. But there's actually so many potential pollutants. It could be as simple as a vinyl flooring that you put in that's off-gassing phthalates, which I've seen 3 different studies link that actually to autism. And so it could be something you're bringing in, not even realizing that we don't know a whole lot about, that we're then breathing in and it's having an effect inside of us.
And one of the most acute problems that we see certainly across the country is a problem with carbon monoxide. So any fuel burning item inside a house or a commercial building, whether it's a water heater or a stove with a pilot light or something like that, can produce anything that's combusting can produce carbon monoxide. And again, that's another colorless, odorless gas that you really need to have a detector for carbon monoxide, because there are every year we hear stories about folks in hotels or in houses who have been either seriously injured or killed by carbon monoxide. It is, again, it's quick acting. And one of the problems tends to be here, say there's a big snowstorm and your power's out for multiple days, and now you bring a generator into the basement or into the garage to run it to generate power. That's going to be giving off carbon monoxide, and it has to be properly vented to the outside so that that carbon monoxide doesn't come into the house and become a problem.
We're talking about indoor air quality on Maine Calling. If you'd like to ask a question, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. What are some health indications that you may have an air quality problem? You've talked about a link between phthalates and autism. I am going to guess that folks who have things like asthma and respiratory problems may have them triggered or exacerbated when they walk into a building with poor air quality. But is there something that might kind of be a tip-off? Boy, everybody in my family seems to fill in the blank. Maybe I need to have my air quality checked out.
So some of the common things are congestion, where you're congested when you're in your house and you go somewhere else and it goes away and you come back and you're congested. It could be irritated eyes. It could be feeling like you have no energy.
The common symptoms tend to be allergic or irritation type symptoms. So difficulty breathing, itchy skin, itchy eyes, runny nose, those kind of things. One interesting thing is that people who have an allergic reaction, Kurt was mentioning congestion. I see a lot of people who have air quality problems in their buildings or homes may tend to have recurring sinus infections or things like that, because all of the, you know, again, Kurt and I are not doctors, but
But you know why people have called you.
Right.
You know why they called you to have correct. Something checked out.
Right. And so people have, if you swell up all the cavities in your, you know, nasal cavities in your ear and things like that, there's more of a chance to trap the bacteria that causes those infections. So it's sort of a secondary cause, I would imagine, from the constant exposure to something that's causing an allergic type reaction. But you were right, you know, high levels of asthma are generally due to some trigger that's causing that, and many times that's something in the building that you're in for a majority of the time.
I know that there's so much we need to talk about, including dust, but we do have to take a break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Nellie Mae Education Foundation, supporting the Maine Education Project and Raise Your Voice on MainePublic.org, and by Thornton Oaks Independent Living Community in Brunswick, where foodies go to retire. Learn more at ThorntonOaks.com. Maine Public is teaming up with Darlings and the Literacy Volunteers of Bangor to share the joy of reading with children across Maine. Many Maine children have limited access to appropriate books, so Maine Public is collecting new books and pristine used books at Darlings and at Maine Public locations. These books will be distributed at many of the Darlings Ice Cream for a Cause stops and also at our upcoming special literacy event this Thursday from 11 to 2 at Maine Public Studio in Bangor at 65 Texas Avenue. This event will include guests reading to the kids, photo opportunities with Clifford the Big Red Dog, and the Darlings Ice Cream for a Cause truck and other fun activities. For more information and all the details, including how to donate books, please visit mainepublic.org and click on events. Our Summer Super Thursday one-day membership campaign is now history. We came so very, very close to making our goals on Thursday and quickly wrap things up in the early morning finish at Friday, Thank you to all of you who took part in both Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical. We raised over $200,000 and we welcomed in over 500 new members. And now, as you know, and as we promised, we're back to our regular programming. New members, additional gifts, evergreen upgrades, together the community came together to get it done. Thanks, everyone.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, indoor air quality. What are the problems and some of the solutions? With me in the studio, Kurt Johnson, owner of Fresh Air Ventilation Systems, and Stephen Caulfield, president of Turner Building Science and Design. Both are board members and former past presidents of the Maine Indoor Air Quality Council. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll start with Ann, who's calling from Bar Harbor. Hi, Ann. Go ahead.
Hi, and thank you very much, as always, for a great show. I have two concerns about products like Febreze. My first concern is that they might mask other hazards, such as mold and perhaps gas leaks. And the other issue I have is, in and of themselves, products like Febreze contain irritants, which some people have allergic-type reactions, whether they're respiratory or skin or something. So I just wondered about that. Thank you.
I think that's a great point, Ann. To spray something into the air to cover up an odor that's there never seemed like a pretty reasonable thing to me. They have no they're not forced to make sure their product is safe. And to cover up the existing problem, to me, it would make more sense to deal with the existing problem than to spray something on top of it to mask it. And the product itself could potentially, certainly for some people who are chemically sensitive, it in and of itself could be a huge problem for them.
Yeah, there's been an explosion, certainly in America, of products to cover up odors. You think of the nice smelling things that we put out or the candles that we burn. So now we get chemical odors as well as the products of combustion that we were talking about. Kurt and I are both in agreement that, finding out the source of the problem that's causing the odor you're trying to mask in the first place and fixing that is better than trying to cover it with additional chemicals. And you're absolutely right. Many products that are made to cover or to deal with odors have in them as ingredients chemicals that cause irritation or problems with for people who have breathing issues or are allergic to them.
Ann, thank you for your question. Let's move to Anna on Facebook. We rent in a recently converted to apartments early 1900s school. My kid has serious asthma and dust and dust mite allergies. What HEPA filter do I buy for 1,000 square feet? It's so hard to find clear advice and filter ratings.
Well, it's kind of a similar answer to the question that was just posed or the statement. That the pollutants in the air, filtering particles out of the air with a HEPA filter is a good strategy within a given room. But if there's an underlying problem that's creating the issue, you need to deal with the underlying issue. So if you're in an old house, it's very common for moisture at some point in that place to be there actually supporting the growth of, say, mold. And it may be that underlying problem that needs to get addressed to solve the breathing issue as opposed to, okay, we're going to allow the pollutant source to continue to do what it's doing and we're going to try to clean the air to be the solution. Again, I just don't think that's a great solution.
Okay. Let's see here. We're going to go to Valerie in Scarborough. Hi, Valerie. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? And I'd like to say hi to Steve because Steve knows me very well.
Yes. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, Val. Hi, Steve. I'm calling in because I'm going to bring up a wood smoke issue and the particulate matter that wood smoke carries into the houses. And for me, I'm an asthmatic, and I have a wood smoke allergy. and people around me just don't care and have no concern. And so my home has been affected, and I have been affected greatly from the open wood burnings, the wood pellet stoves, and things of that nature. And basically for years, I've been fighting to breathe and fighting to, you know, to either ban the burning, stop the burning, or at least, you know, give me a no burn zone so that I can breathe, you know, without having to deal with this this wood smoke.
Valerie, thank you. And I'm sorry to hear what you've been going through. But this brings up two questions. Really, we're talking about outdoor air quality and indoor air quality. Let's start with, if you have a wood stove or a pellet stove, is that venting? No, I'm just talking about people in general, Valerie. I'm sorry. If that's venting to the outside, is it going to also put particulate matter into your home?
Into your home, maybe not, but into your neighbor's home is certainly a possibility.
And this is what Valerie's dealing with.
Right. So there's been a profusion of solid fuel burning appliances, shall we say, or, you know, wood boilers, wood stoves, and, you know, the increased popularity of outdoor burning, just, you know, campfire type things in the backyard. And this leads to an awful lot of really heavy local pollution. You mentioned that, you know, is outdoor air quality an issue? And we certainly see that. You know, we have times when we're getting impacted from forest fires that may be far to the west of us, and the smoke is transported to us. But what Valerie is talking about is more of a real, you know, hyper-local issue that has become a problem, and particularly if things are not vented properly. So when you have an oil-fired boiler, say, all of the exhaust has to be exhausted above the roof line so that there's a chance for that to dissipate before it gets to your neighbor. Many of the wood-burning appliances are not installed like that. We see these outdoor wood boilers with a 6-foot stack, not 20 or 30 feet in the air. And that really, depending on the wind direction, can affect your neighbor greatly.
All right. Well, Valerie, good luck to you. We're going to call, go to Ellsworth and Whitney. Hi, Whitney. Go ahead.
Hello. So my question is we recently bought an older house last fall, and it has a, you know, original, it's 1900s, and originally it had a fireplace in it. We were looking at changing that into a propane fireplace instead of being like a wood burning. And I was doing some looking into it, and there's, you know, either like vented, you know, fire, you know, propane fireplace insert, or a like ventless, which will just supposedly vent to the house. But I was also reading that there's a lot of, you know, some fireplace installers will not install the ventless nowadays because they said it, you know, can significantly impact the indoor air quality on the house.
Okay, good question. So you want to know about the ventless. Go ahead, Kurt.
Well, I guess I'd ask you a simple question. Do you want to have open combustion in your house with no way for that combustion air to get out?
That was what I was reading. Yeah,
right.
They were saying even that, you know, even if you have a gas, you know, stove arranged, that, you know, you should always be running the vent outside, you know, a ducted vent outside, even when you're running your, you know, your cooking stove.
Well, that's correct. Actually, I grew up on a propane stove, actually natural gas. When we moved to Maine, I always liked cooking on that. My experience cooking on electric wasn't good. And so we've had propane in the house for years cooking on it. And when I started to buy some testing equipment, and actually one Thanksgiving, I turned on my testing equipment and saw how high the VOC count was in the room. I kind of opened up my eyes that, oh, my word, I'm actually polluting my house. Then I did another quality test, a two-hour test from 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock at night, and the test came back showing that there was elevated levels of propane, VOCs released when you burn propane in the air. And you have to understand, my house is well-ventilated. I run my ventilation system high speed all the time, so we're talking about 2 hours plus after actually using the device, my air still had the combustion components in it. So I've moved away from that, and I actually have an electric range now because of my concern for those pollutants.
Thanks for your call, Whitney. Going to a question here from Barry on Facebook. I'm mattress hunting and seeking something non-toxic since it's the one piece of furniture we are face-to-face with the most, and I am sensitive to new materials that outgas. I prefer the firmness of foams. I realize fire retardants are required. So, question that can enlighten a general audience. When buying new furniture and bedding, how can one navigate this market to ensure safe furniture?
Well, I just went through this, and airing it out, I don't know how to tell you how to buy one that doesn't have any chemicals coming off of it. Even things that claim to be organic still would likely have things coming off of it. And just the fact that something's organic doesn't mean it's non-harmful. You know, you can eat a mushroom out in the woods that can kill you. So the product, you know, in itself, you would try to find one that has less, the least likely amount of off-gassing that could go on, and that may be difficult to do. But when you get it, to air it out and leave it outside, and there's a couple of things that increase off-gassing. One of them is temperature. You raise the temperature, things off-gas more. You also raise humidity, off-gas more. So buying a mattress like I did and putting it outside in a hot, humid summer day likely is going to allow some of those off gases to come off quicker. And I only did it for actually 2 days. I don't know that that's necessarily a safe, you know, time frame, but I know the smell was greatly reduced by doing it that way. If somebody would say, hey, I'm really sensitive and I want to make sure, I would say it's probably reasonable to have it outside off gassing for probably at least a few weeks if you're really sensitive to stuff.
Wow. We have an email from Carolyn. How is black mold tested for? I work for someone who has a covered porch that has black-looking mold on the white-painted wood. Can I take a scraping and send it to a lab?
You can, but I guess first we should address the issue of black mold versus other mold. And it's sort of a something that came out of legal work and media stories that they created basically something called black mold, which is there are a lot of molds that are black. We know sort of what the, you know, those of us, I'm pointing at Kurt and I, we know sort of what most people mean when they say black mold, but it's really not a descriptive term. Any mold in significant quantity is probably not good for you. The issue with the particular species of mold that's usually associated with black mold is it grows under extreme moisture conditions. So it takes a long time and a lot of water to grow. It's relatively hard to measure in the air because it's real sticky, so it tends to stay where it is. And it does produce more toxins than other molds, but that's, you know, on a microscopic level. And it's really...
mold is mold, and mold is bad.
Right. I guess that's a way to look at it. In significant quantity, you know, with lots of mold is bad. Let's put it that way.
But and mold how does she get it tested?
Mold is everywhere. There are a lot of labs that could test the mold, but I'm not sure that tells you anything beyond that it's
confirming that it's mold.
Mold, right.
And you say mold is everywhere. So how do you know the difference between what's okay to live with and what's really not okay to live with?
Well, in general, there are molds that grow better on the materials we have in houses versus the molds that are out there eating dead trees and leaves. Otherwise, we'd be 40 feet deep in dead leaves every year. The molds that grow indoors tend to grow fast, and they tend to like to eat the foods we give them, which tend to be processed paper, like the face of the gypsum wallboard that we build all our houses out of now. So there are differences between the quantities and types of molds that you'll see outdoors and indoors. The problem comes when you have something that's growing indoors, usually because it has a moisture source, and that can get into the air and affect you because it's, again, it's a lot of mold of any variety. But the molds that grow indoors tend to be the faster growing molds that don't need quite as much moisture as that mushroom you see growing on, you know, a pine root after a rainstorm.
So here's the takeaway. If you see mold, you want to clean it up and don't do it with something that can hurt you like bleach, okay, because bleach is very harmful to us. You want to clean it up with a mixture of, say, 50-50 white vinegar and water, which does a really good job. In fact, it actually will penetrate the surface, and if there's some roots underneath, actually will go after those, which bleach won't. So you use that because it's better for us and it'll still effectively kill the mold. And then you want to find out why that surface was wet enough for it to grow there and take care of the moisture issue so it doesn't come back.
Right, because unlike pollutants like asbestos or lead that are inert, mold is a growing organism. It's not quite a plant and it's not quite an animal, but it grows mostly like a plant, if we want to think about it that way. And just simply removing mold doesn't necessarily prevent it from growing back. I would say it's more like a weed. So if you mow down the crabgrass this year, you know, this week, it's going to grow back next week. That's sort of what mold is like. So it's more important, as Kurt said, to address the moisture source. And oftentimes that's humidity in the air. So you need to lower the humidity in the air. That's not always an easy proposition, but that removing the moisture source is the only true way to deal with the mold problem.
All right. Well, we do have to take another quick break. We're talking about indoor air quality. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Welch & Forbes. Customized investment portfolios, private trustees, family office services. Since 1838, WelchForbes.com.
The whole state is a community, and Maine Public reaches out to the whole state, not just to a city. It brings the state together. We have a very remote camp up near Millinocket where we have to go to the end of the dock and hold the phone in a particular place to get cell coverage. But I've got a little portable radio that I can hang on a nail in the camp and get Maine Public, and it keeps me connected.
Maine Public is with me pretty much in the course of my day. The music selection, Terry Gross, Fresh Air. I get introduced to new music. Robin opens my eyes on classical in ways I never would have thought of.
The way that Maine Public serves the whole state, brings it together, is just really important to me, and I think to the people of Maine.
From news coverage to music and entertainment, humor, it is my go-to. I'm Susan Morris.
And I'm Chip Newell.
We live in Portland.
And escape to our camp near Millinocket whenever possible.
And we support a bold future for Maine Public.
Our comprehensive campaign was a success because of your support. Thank you for your generosity and for helping Maine Public chart a bold future.
I'm Greg Dalton, and on the next Climate One, Al Gore talks about his new documentary, an inconvenient sequel, Truth to Power.
We're going to win this. The remaining question is whether we'll win it in time. We still have the opportunity to avoid the catastrophic results for human civilization, but we have to build on this momentum and increase it.
Al Gore on the next Climate One.
And you can hear that broadcast this afternoon at 2 p.m.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what to do about indoor air quality and improving it. Joining me today, Stephen Caulfield, president of Turner Building Science and Design, and Kurt Johnson, owner of Fresh Air Ventilation Systems. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Vicki, who's calling from Western Maine. Hi, Vicki. Go ahead.
Hi there. I'd like to go back to the topic of radon, and I live in an older home built in the 1700s, and the walls in the basement are essentially just dry stacked rocks. So if I went through radon remediation by putting a slab down, wouldn't the radon still just come right through the walls?
It could. It could be right in those stones themselves and be emitting out of the stones. Have you tested for radon?
Yeah, my level was only 4, which I'm not too worried about it, but there are so many people in Western Maine are in the same situation as I with the dry stacked foundation.
Well, I would say in that case, what you can do and to to properly seal that out can be quite expensive. But in that case, what I'm allowed to say, according to the state, is ventilating that space can reduce that number in half. And that would be a lower cost way to try to address the problem than trying to seal everything. And in fact, your foundation may be so old that may be exceedingly difficult to do. I don't know if Steve has anything to comment on that.
Right. When I was speaking earlier about remediating radon problems, I was talking mainly about those buildings that have a concrete slab in contact with the earth. And it becomes more challenging if you have a stone foundation or a dirt floor crawl space or basement. And there are solutions in those cases, but they tend to be a little more complex. So I think Kurt's right. You know, in your case, it may be the most cost-effective solution to actually ventilate the space to lower the level of radon in the air.
Vicki, thanks for your call. Going back to the email from Lyle, please discuss houseplants as a potential mitigation strategy for poor air quality. I know this is from the Victorian era when we first had a coal-fired industry coming into England.
Yeah, I would say based upon what I've seen, and I've looked at this, a number of different articles, different avenues, NASA stuff, there's really no conclusive stuff that would show that that would be a highly effective way to deal with this problem. One of the problems about putting a whole bunch of plants in your house, different species can filter out different VOCs and different things in the air. But you are bringing in something that is organic itself, and you have to water it. And potentially you're bringing in a place where mold might like to grow. So, you know, in trying to solve one problem with it, you might actually be causing another. But bottom line is I haven't seen anything that would suggest you could put enough plants in your house that that would be a solution to this issue.
Rebecca on Facebook, I have multiple chemical sensitivity along with environmentally induced asthma. So every building in the world is a potential minefield for me. A big one is artificial fragrances and detergents, deodorants, and personal care products. I also had to stop going into my son's elementary school because the cleaners they used on the floors and the hallways in the gymnasium. I volunteered in the library one day a week and would spend the rest of the week sick until I realized what was happening. You guys are nodding. You've heard stories like this.
Yeah, actually, my practice, and I've been ventilating houses for the last 11 years. In the last 2 years, I've had more calls from people with conditions like yours than I did in my first 8 years doing it. You've actually got a couple potential things going on there. You can be having actually an allergic reaction, and you can also be having a chemical reaction, and they may be different. So the problem that I see, and certainly it's being supported by statistics, is that we're getting more and more people who are becoming more and more sensitized to the environment. I would go back to what I said initially, is that we're making our buildings tighter. We're bringing in more pollutants in there. The human body can tolerate it to a certain point, and at a certain point it says, I don't want this anymore. And it's actually a way to tell you, hey, you shouldn't be in this environment because it's not good for your body. I don't like the idea that we have to have so many of those people before we take this issue as serious as it is. But I think that's a result of us living in the indoor environment that we've been living in, that we're starting to get more and more people like her.
Steve, advice for, you know, maybe I'm a school superintendent and I've just heard that complaint. Are there products out there that are effective and cost effective that a school janitor or superintendent, you know, maintenance supervisor can use to keep the school that's full of dirty kids all day clean and also not be toxic to people with sensitivities?
Yes, there are. And I can't come up with names.
You can't name
off
them the
top,
on the spot.
But,
that's fine.
But I will say that having some kind of policy to control the introduction of chemicals, you know, into a place like a school is certainly a good first step. I've seen a couple of times where I've been called in to look at, you know, what was thought to be a mold problem because a student was having an asthmatic reaction in a certain classroom, and have found that the custodial staff is using cleaning products that are so toxic, you know, basically they're meant to be used on a surface and then washed for 10 minutes. But the reason they were using something that was so strong was at that time there was an outbreak of MRSA, the staph infection that was scaring everyone. And so in a misguided attempt to try and safeguard the children, they were cleaning their desks with a product that, you know, then the kids would touch and touch their mouth and breathe in, and was causing problems, at least to a small segment of the population. So I would just be careful to use the least toxic material you can to get the job done. And there are many cleaning rating agencies and product manufacturers that can help guide the maintenance staff through that.
And I would add, we've been spending a lot of time talking about pollutants and the things that they cause and how to limit that. The two strategies that we have to deal with indoor air pollutants are limit the source of what the pollutant is, and we can't eliminate all the pollutants. The second part of it is to ventilate out what is in there so that we reduce the concentrations of it. And on the ventilation side of the equation, ventilation isn't a new concept. It dates back thousands of years. But one of the things that we are lacking, and studies will support, that when we increase ventilation rates, and in schools we see this, we reduce absentee rates and we increase performance. And our buildings here in Maine, certainly any building that's been around for a long period of time, unlikely has even minimum ventilation. But the studies show that when we increase above minimum levels and actually increase it up to 2 to 3 times that, there is a positive payback for the school system because they get paid. They get money from the government when a kid goes up to school. And if you reduce absenteeism, the school actually brings in more money. And you also then increase the scores. And there's multiple studies that show that. So we should be putting more emphasis. Yeah, it does cost a little bit to put in some type of a ventilation system. You do lose a little bit of energy. But there are great positive benefits that far outweigh the negatives of the expense of it. And we need to focus more on that.
We have an email from Ann. We recently moved into a home built in 1942 in Falmouth Forsyth, about an eighth of a mile from the water. We smelled a fairly strong odor of mold, which we determined was coming from the window wells. We bleached and then painted them, and it has improved a lot. Going forward, we plan on replacing them since they are original to the house, with lead paint, heat loss, etc. We are wondering whether we should insulate further, since we are not sure white type or the extent of the insulation that exists, but we are concerned about reducing the ventilation to the point that it would contribute to an internal moisture problem. I have a feeling a lot of people who live up and down Maine's coast have issues.
Yeah, and it's not a simple solution to say whether insulation is good or bad in your situation. I mean, particularly when you're talking about window wells, so I'm guessing this is connected to a below grade space, that's when it gets really tricky because there's a lot of moisture moving out of the soil into the building. And as you insulate, you lose the ability of the heat within the house to drive that moisture back out. So you can create problems by insulating those spaces. So I guess I can't answer
without seeing her home.
A hypothetical without seeing the specific
right.
situation.
So key principle would be, if something gets wet, how's it going to dry? Mm-hmm. And when we start tightening up houses, we actually hurt the drying side of the equation because a wall system has to dry either to the inside or to the outside. And that's one of the problems when you start insulating. You may actually make something that was getting wet and was drying. Now it will not dry, and you might actually make a problem worse that existed before.
We'll go to Jamie calling from Portland. Jamie, if you could be quick. We're almost out of time. Go ahead.
Sure, Jennifer. We installed a gas stove in a Portland home. You know, we're on the gas pipe. Concerns as a propane stove?
Are there, do natural gas stoves have the same, bring up the same concerns for you, Kurt, as a propane stove?
Yeah, it definitely does. It's an organic gas that when you burn it, you have VOCs that come off of that, whether it's propane or natural gas. It's basically the same.
Yeah, any cooking should really be vented to the outside. There are lots of things that are generated when you create heat and the moisture that comes off of cooking. So there's lots of reasons why it's a good idea to vent that to the outside.
Okay. And let's see. You'll try to squeeze in Don as well. Don, if you could be quick, that would be great.
My question is, if I've got an HRV system in my house, which I do, should that ductwork be cleaned intermittently?
In my experience, Don, the buildup of debris in there is pretty low. And I've seen systems 10, 15, 20 years old that I would say probably still don't need to be cleaned. But overall, I don't think that's a huge problem.
All right, Don, thanks for your question. Steve, final thoughts.
Yeah, I guess our advice from the Maine Indoor Air Quality Council to prevent air quality problems would be to keep spaces clean, dry, well-ventilated, and free of pollutants. And, you know, if you just think about those things at any time when you're dealing with an air quality issue, if there's a way to make things cleaner, drier, or freer of pollutants, or increase the ventilation, that's a good idea.
And I would add, being a ventilation guy, that a lot of times things like the radon level get interpreted maybe not quite on target. The ASHRAE ventilation rate, which is only a suggestion in Maine, is a minimum ventilation rate, which means you should never be less than it. But it's certainly not a healthy rate. You could be doing stuff in that house that would be very reasonable for you to ventilate it two or three times that level. And in fact, studies would support that three times that level, if you really want to be healthy, it would be three times our minimum rate.
All right. Well, thank you both for being here. Eye-opening program. Kurt Johnson owns Fresh Air Ventilation Systems, and Stephen Caulfield is president of Turner Building Science and Design. Both of our guests are with the Maine Indoor Air Quality Council, both past presidents of that council. George Thomas ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as our link to our audio archives at mainecalling.net. Today's show will be rebroadcast tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, Maine's role in the national debate over voter fraud. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.